This program is for entertainment and educational purposes and without warranty as to completeness and accuracy of the commentary or opinions. The opinions expressed are solely those of the host and not those of the sponsors or affiliate attorneys or this radio station. No attorney-client relationship is established by any response or commentary on a legal subject. Alabama law requires the following disclaimer. No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal service of other lawyers. Welcome to Law Chat 24/7, a weekly show that reviews and discusses legal issues that impact you and our community. Sponsored by Boatler Richardson Wolf Injury Lawyers, proudly serving the citizens of the Alabama, Mississippi, Florida Gulf Coast since 1987. Now, your hosts of Law Chat 24/7, attorney Mark Wolf and his co-host Marion Boatler.
Good evening and welcome to Law Chat 24/7. I'm Mark Wolf with my host, Marion Boatler. How are you doing, Marion?
I am great. How are you doing, Mark?
Doing well. Did you have a good weekend?
Wonderful. At Dauphin Island with some friends.
Oh, very fun. Very fun. We have another great show lined up for you this evening. And in case people are not familiar with our format, we respond to questions that have been submitted from various formats throughout the week, and we choose a couple questions that we will address throughout the show. And Marion, you want to tell folks how they can get their questions submitted for a response from a lawyer within 24 hours?
Absolutely. There are three ways to submit your legal questions and get a response in 24 hours. The first one is to go on to lawchat247.com, and then the second, our Facebook page, Law Chat 24/7, in the Messenger section, or send an email directly to Mark at mark@brwlawyers.com.
And we appreciate everybody who's been submitting questions over the last several weeks. Hard to believe we're on show number 10.
I know.
Time is rolling through, but we've had some great questions and covered a lot of different areas of law. It's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start. We have some questions about a car accident in just a second. But, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about just car accident statistics and that there are 6 million car accidents a year.
Wow.
And quite a number of car mm-hmm. accidents, 3 million injuries per year, most of them sprain, strain type injuries. But have you ever been involved in a car accident?
I have. It was just a fender bender, so there were no injuries. But it was scary. I didn't know what to do. My son was in the car, and he was a one-year-old. So it was kind of scary.
Yeah, I was a couple of weeks ago. I was in a mm-hmm. fender bender coming out of a parking lot. Not a major accident. Nobody
right.
was hurt either. But yes, it is kind of mm-hmm. it's a shocking, kind of an unexpected thing. And it was so funny. I was sitting there, and I was a little bit nervous and shook up.
Mm-hmm.
And I started having to try to breathe deeply to calm
yes.
myself
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's. We have in our law firm, we have the guide for auto crash insurance claims that's available free. You can email us or call us. It's a 16-page booklet. But at the back of the booklet, it has a section on what to do at the accident scene.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was sitting there trying to calm myself, I started going through this list of all these things that are on here. Number one is stay calm.
Right.
Getting upset only makes a bad situation more difficult. Maintain your composure. Even if the other person doesn't, you got to check for injuries, call the police. Even if the accident is minor, call the police, notify them of any injuries so that they can call medical assistance. Don't move an injured person unless they are in immediate danger.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave the scene of the accident. Even if the other person says, "Yo, it's okay, you can go on," remain at the scene. I had some clients who were in an accident, and the lady that ran into him said, "Well, I've just got to run up here and pick up my kid from daycare.
Right.
I'll be right back." And she never came back.
Oh, no.
Protect the scene of the accident. This is very critical. Don't move your vehicles unless you have to, and we'll talk about that in a second. But you can preserve the accident scene by photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Don't blame the accident on anyone, including yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you might be at fault, don't say so to anyone. Give your full description of the accident only to the police officer. And then exchange information with the other driver, license plate numbers, names and addresses, all that information, insurance company information, address, name and address of any witnesses. And this is something that we added recently. Use your smartphone.
Right.
Almost everybody has a smartphone. Take photos of the scene, including any skid marks or gouge marks. Take photos of the damaged vehicles, if possible, any interior damage. Take a video or audio statement from witnesses. This mm-hmm. is something a lot of people forget, that they have audio. They can
Absolutely.
Say, hey, what happened? Can you tell me what happened, what you saw? So you can get a statement. You can get videos or photographs of traffic sites, lights. And then the last thing is, if the police come, is you definitely want to make sure that you get know how to get the accident report.
Right.
Because we've talked about before how important it is to get the accident report, review the accident report, and make sure it's accurate, especially before you go giving a statement to the insurance company. So, again, but the booklet is free. You can actually get it free from our website, brwlawyers.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go there. There's no strings attached. You can download it. But if you want a hard copy, what we tell all of our clients that we give it to, just take a hard copy and put it in your glove box.
Exactly.
That way you've got it right there. What to do at the scene, just as a kind of reminder if you're ever in that situation, because as we both just said, it's kind of frazzling.
It is.
So, all right. Well, that kind of rolls into our first question about a car accident scene. And what is that one?
Well, it's from Candace from Mobile. Sent this question to us from the Facebook Messenger. And can you move your cars after an accident?
And the answer to that is yes, you can. A lot of people think it's illegal mm-hmm. to move a car after an accident. It's not necessarily illegal, but you want to leave the cars where they are if they're not impeding traffic or not causing harm
mm-hmm.
to anybody, or if you can move the cars without causing more damage to the car. Again, if you use your smartphone and capture the scene and get photographs of everything, where everything has happened and where all the debris is, and then you move your cars, it's okay. In the situation I was in, I had to move because literally we were blocking three lanes of travel. So I was not going to leave the car right there.
I would have been very upset.
Yes, a lot of people would have been very upset if I was just standing there. I mean, I think people will forgive if somebody had been seriously hurt.
Absolutely.
I think people
Absolutely.
Certainly would forgive that. But in a minor fender bender like we had, it was just a situation where we moved the vehicles. We got out and photographed the scene. He got out and photographed the scene. I got out and photographed the scene. We eventually moved the vehicles off the roadway after the police officer got there. But again, it's kind of and with 6 million accidents a year,
mm-hmm.
there's a good chance you're going to be in an accident at some point this year. And just knowing what to do and having information about not just what to do at the scene, but about getting the accident report, what to do with the accident report, and then knowing the insurance process. That was all the reasons we went ahead and published this booklet, the 16-page booklet. So
mm-hmm.
lots of good information. So we're yeah. rolling through everything, and we're coming up on our first break in about a minute and a half. We have time for maybe a quick hitter question. We have
sure.
a couple of those available. Well, what do we got next?
This is a question from John, wants to know, what is a mandamus action?
Okay, and a writ of mandamus is just basically a legal proceeding against an official,
mm-hmm.
like an elected official, to try to get them to do their job.
Okay.
If you don't feel like an elected official is doing something that they're supposed to be doing in their elected capacity, you can file a writ of mandamus against them in a court of proper jurisdiction, and then you can ask the court to enforce them to, force the elected official to do something that they're supposed
mm-hmm.
to do. It's commonly called a writ of mandamus. Sometimes if a judge rules against a party in a lawsuit, they'll file a writ of mandamus against the judge. And again, but that's also in the function of the judicial capacity. But again, if for example, your trash collectors are not coming, and
mm-hmm.
the city trash official has said, well, we're not going to pick up garbage on your street for whatever reason, and you think they're supposed to, you can actually file a writ of mandamus with the court of proper jurisdiction to try to force them, the public official, to do their job as
mm-hmm.
it's prescribed. So, again, interesting question, good question.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions we get are just legal terminology
right.
questions. People hear something, and in fact, in our final segment, we have kind of a similar type question. Somebody's heard something, seen something, they're not sure exactly what it means.
Exactly.
So we're always happy to take those questions and answer those questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
Good.
One last time, tell folks how they can get their questions answered.
Absolutely. LawChat247.com or Facebook page, Law Chat 24/7, Messenger, or just a direct email to you, Mark.
Perfect. Very good. We'll see y'all after the break.
Wonderful.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7. To be a part of the show and to have your legal questions answered, email Mark Wolf. Details online at lawchat247.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Wolf and Marion Boatler.
Welcome back to our second segment. We have a couple of some long questions in this segment, so we're just going to jump right into our first question for this segment, and that is from Allison, I think.
Yes, it is. Allison sent us this question through the Facebook app, Messenger, about a fall she had at a restaurant. She said, "I slipped and fell at a restaurant about 2 months ago. I twisted my ankle pretty bad and went to the ER just to make sure it was not broken. It was not broken, just sprained. I had one follow-up visit with my family doctor about 2 weeks later just to check the swelling. Everything worked out fine, and I had no more problems, although I was never technically released by my doctor. Shortly after the fall, I received a letter from my health insurance company asking for details of my fall. Yesterday, they sent me another letter saying that I needed to contact the restaurant's insurance company for payment of any future medical bills. They also said I owed them for the previous medical bills if I got any money from the restaurant's insurance company. I'm confused and not sure what I should do."
Okay, and this is a very, very common situation that we see. And we've got two issues to talk about in this. One is the health insurance company is a secondary payor, and then the other is subrogation, which is a legal term related to payments of insurance benefits. We're seeing more and more health insurance companies delineate themselves in their policy or their plans or whatever as a secondary payor. And what that means is they pay after payment of any other available or applicable insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is they may come in and pay a bill, and then they look at the codes for the billing statement and say, well, this looks like it might be from an accident mm-hmm. or a fall. They send a letter to the insured and get more details, and if they think there may be other available insurance, then they send you a letter back, like Allison got, that says, hey, go get your payments
right.
from the restaurant. And it does create a lot of confusion because we have two cases right now where actually the people had not planned on doing anything about their fall. They
mm-hmm.
just, you know, weren't going to try to pursue it. And then they get this letter, and next thing you know, they're in a battle between insurance
right.
companies because the restaurant's insurance company doesn't want to pay, and the health insurance company saying, no, they got to pay. So we end up in a situation where we're really just trying to coordinate insurance benefits for people in this situation. And it does get a little bit confusing. The second thing she talks about is subrogation, and that is, if a health insurance company or any insurance company pays you benefits under your policy and then you recover for those same injuries or same damages from another insurance company, a liability insurance company, for example, you do in most situations have an obligation to pay back your health insurance company. That
mm-hmm.
legal principle is called subrogation. So, again, a lot of people get that subrogation letter and think, oh, my God, I've got to pay this back, and
right.
they don't. Unless they get money on their what we call a third-party claim against a responsible party. So she has a lot going on here. We kind of went through all of this with her, got her kind of straightened out. I think everything's going to work out for her without too much problem. But
mm-hmm.
again, it does. We see this a lot because of the secondary payer. All of your governmental health agencies, Medicare, Medicaid, VA, TRICARE, any of those are all deemed secondary payors, so they all have this right of subrogation, and they all have the right to kind of push you to try to pursue benefits from other sources
mm-hmm.
first before they're responsible. So,
okay.
And if you ignore them and you don't pay them back, they can cancel your benefits.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah. Especially with the governmental agencies, not something to ignore. So
that was good to contact a lawyer just to see what the letter was all about. Well, good. Well, thank you. The next question is from Pat from Spanish Fort. Sent in this question on the lawchat247.com website, stating, "I own some property in Baldwin County, and some people keep riding their four-wheelers and dirt bikes all through my property. I'm scared they're going to get hurt on my property and sue me. Can they do that? It's a good question.
Yeah, and no, again, there are certain duties you have if you own property. If you have a known hazard and you know people are, even if they're trespassing, you do have some obligation to try to either warn about that danger mm-hmm. or eliminate that danger. Now, with that said, you're not responsible for ensuring their safety when they're trespassing on your property. Mm-hmm. And if someone is, especially if someone is out there four-wheeling or mm-hmm. dirt biking and they crash and get hurt, as long as the property owner has done nothing to cause that or contribute to that, then there's really, you know, as we say in the Can I Sue segment, you can always, you can sue for anything, but the likelihood of any recovery is going to be pretty nominal. The only thing you, three things you can't do if you own property. You can't intentionally hurt somebody. Mm-hmm. You can't willfully hurt somebody that's trespassing on your property. And you can't set a trap for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a no-no. You cannot do that because that falls in under an intentional injury. And as long as you undertake reasonable steps to try to make sure if you know people are out there using your property, that you have signs up.
That's what I've seen, a lot of signage.
And yeah, and that's a good one. Phil just kicked in beware of dog signs. That's a very good one. Beware of wild pigs would be even a better one there in Baldwin County. Those things are scary. But as long as you're taking reasonable steps to make sure it's not dangerous, you're not going to be responsible if they get hurt on your property. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, if somebody were to come to us and say, hey, I got hurt when I was trespassing on somebody's property by riding my four-wheeler, we'd pretty much say, well, unless there was a defect with the four-wheeler, you're not gonna have much of a claim. So,
All right. Well, good. But thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question.
The next one is from Bill. Wants to know about a fall claim. He posted, "I need assistance with an ongoing injury claim from a fall that occurred at XYZ retail store on December 24th, 2018, in Dothan, Alabama. I got really hot and passed out, causing me to fall and hit my head. I was taken to my vehicle by the store employees. I went to the hospital on the same day. I was given a CT scan and MRI for my head injury. There was nothing determined. I need help with my claim because the store said they were not going to pay anything."
All right. Hmm. Two things to talk about on Bill's claim here. First is the concept under Alabama law. We've talked about this before. Sometimes people think that there's strict liability or strict responsibility if you're hurt on somebody else's property, and that is not the law in Alabama. Generally, if you want to make somebody pay for your medical bills, your pain and suffering, all of the damages that come with a personal injury, you have to show that that person or store was somehow negligent mm-hmm. that caused your injury. In this situation, Bill just, for whatever reason, passed out, and really, based upon what he's telling us, there's just no real fault on the part of the
right.
store that did anything to cause his fall and cause his injury. So the store probably, maybe rightfully, is denying the claim, saying we're not liable. Mm-hmm. We're not responsible for causing your injuries. Now, also, in a premise liability situation, some stores or some premise owners have, in addition to liability insurance on their premises, they have MedPay insurance, mm-hmm. medical payments coverage. Now, MedPay is not a fault-based insurance. In other words, if there's MedPay coverage available, then you can act, if you're hurt on somebody's property, you can access those MedPay benefits for your medical bills. And that would be, coming back to our question with Allison, that would be a primary payer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, health insurance companies want to know, did they have medical payments coverage, because it's no fault and it's a primary payer. Generally, MedPay is not that much. If you have a home, most of the time your homeowner's MedPay is $1,000 or $5,000. You can also have MedPay on your car.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually $1,000 to $5,000. It's basically almost like a supplemental coverage. And the nice thing about MedPay is it's a non-fault-based coverage. You
mm-hmm.
don't have to prove fault to get those benefits. And we had a client that was injured on the premises, and the premise owner had $10,000 of MedPay, which we were able to access, and then we were able to go on and show that they the premise owner caused his injuries and the fall was caused by their negligence of leaving a dangerous condition on the premises mm-hmm. that caused him to fall. So, again, that's something to look into and understand the difference on premise responsibility between liability and MedPay coverage. So, again, good questions, long questions for this session, but we're coming up on our next break. And if we want to remind people how they can submit their questions to us, that would be great.
Absolutely. They can submit questions through LawChat247.com website or LawChat247 Facebook page through the Messenger app. Or just a direct email to you, Mark, mark@brwlawyers.com.
That would be perfect. And if by chance I don't respond to your email, please try to send it again or give me a call at 251-410-7761 because I do get a lot of emails and some of them go to spam. All right, we'll hopefully you'll join us on our next segment after the break. We're going to be dealing with some shady characters in the next segment. So come on back.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7. To be a part of the show and to have your legal questions answered, email Mark Wolf. Details online at lawchat247.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Wolf and Marion Boatler.
Welcome back to our third segment. I'm glad y'all are listening this evening. We called this third segment the Shady Characters section because we have questions from people about different situations where they are somewhat concerned about the person they've been dealing with. So how about let's start with the question from Sandra.
All righty. This question is from Sandra and Daphne. She has a question about an injury settlement. She sent this question through the BRW web inquiry page, stating, I was involved in a wreck. My lawyer told me the insurance company had settled for $20,000, but I told him I didn't think that was right based on the damage I suffered. 2 days later, he told me he managed to settle for $25,000. However, I never saw the check nor any sign of the amount that was settled apart from what he told me. All he gave me was an accounting showing where he had paid my medical bills. The rest of the money was then handed to me. The accounting did not show where he took his percentage. I asked if he was still about to get his percentage, and he just said, don't worry about it, that he was only doing me a favor and that it was okay and I should never mind. It did not add up to me, and one of his employees quietly told me to watch out for her boss. What should I do? Thank you.
Okay, and this is a situation that sometimes comes up in personal injury matters. First, the first thing that Sandra should do is to write the lawyer and ask for a couple documents. Anytime you hire a personal injury lawyer and it's done on a contingency fee, first, the contingency fee has to be in writing and has to explain how the contingency fee and expenses are going to apply to the case. The second thing, and this is under the rules of professional conduct, second thing is upon a distribution in this situation, the client is entitled to an accounting showing basically the money that came in and the money that went out. It sounds like she got kind of a partial accounting and not a full accounting. Mm-hmm. And typically in our office, when you get your accounting at the end of the, we call it the distribution schedule, we attach copies of all the checks, the checks that have come in and checks to healthcare providers we've written out. And we give the client a copy of the release. The release will tell you how much the case settled for. So in this situation, we advise Sandra to write a letter to the lawyer, just send it regular mail. I actually said by fax because that's a lot easier, asking for a copy of the fee contract, a copy of the distribution schedule, copies of checks, and most importantly, a copy of the release. If he does not provide that to her, then her next step would be to file a grievance either with the local and this happened in Mobile, in Daphne. So if there's a bar complaint division of the Baldwin County Bar Association, she could file it there or with the state bar, but sending in a copy of that letter. And the state bar will intervene and try to figure out what happened in that situation. But, again, if you're hiring a personal injury lawyer, make sure you get a copy of the fee contract. at the end of the case, get a copy of the distribution schedule and the release. And I would like to say this is not the norm for mm-hmm. personal injury lawyers. Most of the personal injury lawyers that I know do everything with the properly in accordance with the rules of professional conduct. So sounds like she may have just gotten a little bad apple there, mm-hmm. so, which seems like we're all suffering from these days. Mm-hmm. So, all right. How about the next question?
Yes, this question is from the website page. It says, we had water backup in my basement. We found a gentleman that told us he had a successful company. We paid him money up front, then we agreed on a monthly payment plan because of our situation. After looking at damage, he advised us to contact the insurance company. He insisted on being here when anyone from the insurance was here. He presented himself to everyone as the owner of a successful company. After we received the insurance money, he told us he needed all of it to pay his crew and get the needed supplies. He took all our money and left. I had tried for 2 months to contact him and give him the benefit of the doubt. I started looking around and found I am not the first person he has done this to.
Okay, and this is a situation where, unfortunately, these kind of things happen sometimes, where you think you're dealing with somebody that's on the up and up, and it's not just contractors, it's anybody, and you don't feel like you need to verify anything mm-hmm. or have something in writing. A lot of people are like, oh, my bond is my word, and I work on a handshake. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's all fine and good if everything works out. But one of the things lawyers typically do is when we look at situations, we're analyzing it from the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. What's the worst case? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? And then prepare for that. I always like to say to our clients, look, we prepare for the worst and pray for the best. Mm-hmm. In this situation, not having something in writing about how the payments were going to be structured, again, especially if you're giving the full amount of money to somebody up front before any work is done, you really need to have something in writing verifying what they're supposed to be doing, outlining what they're going to be doing with the funds. A lot of times in construction situations, most contractors work on a third payment system mm-hmm. or some sort of a structured payment system, depending upon how big the job is. You're usually not paying everything up front, and a lot of times it doesn't always have to be anything formal like a formal contract. It can just be a simple fax or an email. This is to confirm my understanding you're going to be doing A, B, C, and D. After you get those finished, we're going to pay you this amount.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then, you know, it just has to be something that you can at some point come back on. Again, because in her situation, if she has to go to court, it's the mm-hmm. contractor, well, they told me they're going to pay me up front, and then to get into this, well, nobody ever defined what was going to be done, or there's nothing in writing. So try to get everything. You don't have to go get a lawyer to draw up a formal contract as much as you just need to verify it in writing,
right,
what's going to happen and how things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is a situation that is not uncommon.
Right.
Have y'all ever had any issues?
I have not, but I've heard of this. Yeah. And I know just getting up front, yeah, all the kind of expectations then.
Yeah, it's and again, I'm very lucky because my wife handles all of these. She's actually interviewing contractors for bathroom renovations right now. So
good.
But anyway, so again, just a simple thing to do. It doesn't, again, a lot of times people are like, well, I don't want to go get a lawyer to draw a contract. Mm-hmm. And you don't even really have to have that. You just have to have something that you can fall back on to say, hey, this is what we said you said you were going to do. This is what we agreed upon.
And with this type of work, are people able to go to the Better Business Bureau or the...
They could and file a grievance, but, you know, the Better Business Bureau doesn't really enforce. It's not a get your money back for you situation. It's mm-hmm. a kind of a file a complaint and let the other person respond.
Okay.
Again, in her situation, if she wants her money back, she may have to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. Then it becomes having to prove what was said or what was supposed to have been done.
Right.
And without anything in writing, it gets really difficult. So.
Okay. Well, on this next question, if we have time, I believe
we do.
It states, after my car crash, I immediately hired a TV lawyer. He told me to go see a certain doctor because that doctor was in his preferred health care provider network. The doctor keeps telling me that I need all of this medical treatment so I can get more money for my claim. I'm skeptical and suspicious of the doctor. Do I have to use my lawyer's preferred doctor for my injury care?
And the answer to that is no. Just like we talked about with body shops, insurance companies will sometimes try to get you to use a preferred body shop, and you don't have to use a preferred body shop. You can use an independent, like our friends at Spectrum Collision Center. But in this situation, the reason I pulled this is because this is a situation where sometimes people go in a little bit naive and don't understand some of the red flags that this may be raising for the insurance company related to their claim. I always tell clients, before you think about hiring a lawyer, it's not a problem to consult with the lawyer right after an accident, but before you run out and hire a lawyer, find out what your injuries are. Find out if what care or treatment you may need. Find out what a doctor says. Because when you run and hire a lawyer first, and then the lawyer sends you to a doctor, well, the insurance companies track, and if they know lawyer X always uses doctor Y, they see a pattern and they become suspicious. And it's one, and it's not a lot of lawyers that do injury work know doctors and make recommendations. We do it all the time for our clients. If they need a physical therapist, we know physical therapists in different locations. We can point them to somebody that's close to their where they are. So it's not unusual for lawyers to make recommendations. It's just, in this case, it's the timing of it. And I would be a little bit skeptical about a doctor that is trying to push treatment for the sole purpose of, quote, building up the insurance claim. That sounds like the doctor's maybe a little bit motivated to help his buddy, the lawyer. And again, just not a critical situation, not something that I'm not saying it's going to ruin the claim, but the claim may not get full credit if the insurance company is suspicious or skeptical of it. And again, it is a red flag for insurance companies when people run out and hire a lawyer before they go see a doctor. So always go, you know, to get checked out first and then go consult. Even if you want to consult with a lawyer before you go see a doctor, perfectly fine. Just don't run out and hire one. Unless there are some situations where it might be needed. But in a situation where it's a simple car accident without critical injuries, you want to kind of know what your rights are. I always tell folks, get your accident report. Come talk to me. I'll tell you how the process works. And you can, if you think you need a lawyer, I'll tell you when it may be time to hire a lawyer. Just kind of give you the overview of the process. So, and again, that's coming back to what we started the show with. That comes back to our guide for auto crash insurance claims that is available free at our website, brwlawyers.com. No strings attached. You just go. It asks you if you want a copy. You click on it. We do ask for your email address because we email you a link to this article, this publication. But you also get directed to it right then from our website, so you can download it. But we like to email you the link just in case you need to go back and get it downloaded at some other time. Because if you're driving and you request it, you can't download it. We don't want you downloading it and reading it while you're driving.
Exactly.
So, but it is free at our website, brwlawyers.com. All you got to do is go to the site, pops up, says, do you want our free copy? You click yes, give it an email address, and boom, there it is. You have it to download. But again, if you want the hard booklet for in your car and in your glove box, because it has this handy-dandy what to do at the accident scene information on the back, you can either call us or send us an email request, and we'll be glad to mail you a copy as well. So,
well, great.
Next, coming up on our next break, we're coming into our final segment, which includes the
Can I Sue
segment. So y'all come on back after these words from some of our sponsors.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7. To be a part of the show and to have your legal questions answered, email Mark Wolf. Details online at lawchat247.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Wolf and Marion Boatler.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7 to our final segment. We're going to be dealing with some legal terminology in our final segment before we get to the Can I Sue question. What's our next question, Marion?
Our next question is from Carrie, and she wanted to know about some paperwork she signed. She posted, at the gym where I work out, I have to sign a waiver and indemnity agreement. I'm pretty sure I understand the waiver part of what I signed, but what is indemnity?
All right, and we're going to have a waiver question for the can I sue, so we'll talk about that in a second. But very common, indemnity is basically where you are agreeing that if you do something wrong that causes, in this case, the gym to get sued, and you will indemnify them, meaning you will defend them and pay any judgment that you cause to be entered against them. For example, if Carrie was working out and left some weights dangling or sitting somewhere dangerous, and somebody came by and those weights fell on them, and that person sued the gym, and the gym could determine through their video, hey, wait, Carrie caused this, then they could seek indemnity from Carrie through if they were sued for those for that person's damages. And the interesting thing, just kind of on a side note, a lot of people don't realize your homeowner's insurance goes with you when you leave your house for negligent actions outside of driving. So in this case, if somebody were to sue Carrie for doing something negligent or careless at the gym that caused somebody else's injury, she could actually reach to her homeowner's insurance under the liability provisions for a defense and possible payment of that claim against her. So kind of an interesting thing, but indemnity is basically where you're agreeing that if your negligence causes injuries to somebody else and then causes another party to get sued, that you'll cover the cost of the defense of that lawsuit. Now, it doesn't cover you. It doesn't apply if, for example, Carrie was negligent, but they had a rack at the gym that was also not maintained, that also contributed to the fall. Then basically the claim would be against the gym and Carrie combined, and the indemnity would probably not fly at that point. But and it's common in these type waivers. It's really common in commercial transaction laws, and some of these, you know, 200, 300 page lawsuits have 20, 30 pages devoted to indemnity. Over the years, I've had to look through a couple of those related to some fairly major insurance claims, and it gets quite convoluted.
I'm sure.
All right. That brings us to can I sue?
Ooh, all righty. This is about a waiver as well. Like you said, it states, I signed a waiver that said they were not responsible for injuries during an event. They had not properly secured a gate, and it came open. When it slung open, it hit me and knocked me down. It hurt my knee pretty bad, and I had to go to the ER, and now I'm seeing my family doctor for follow-up care. Even though I signed a waiver, can I sue?
And, of course, what is our answer to can I sue?
Yes.
Yes, you can sue for anything. Doesn't mean you'll be successful.
Exactly.
And this is a very, very interesting question, because we see a lot of waivers signed at events and during different functions and going to different places, trampoline parks. You've probably signed a zillion of them for your kids when you've taken them places. The answer to this question is the typical lawyer answer. It's a maybe, because Alabama law does recognize waivers and does accept waivers as valid as long as the specific risk and dangers were known and incorporated in that waiver. So you have to really look at the language of the waiver, the nature of the injury, to see if that waiver specifically covered that. We tend to construe waivers kind of tightly. The law in general does not like them, because people are basically saying, hey, I'm going to be careless and you can't sue me. So the law has a tendency not to favor that kind of action and waiver. So generally, waivers are looked at very tightly and construed very strictly to make sure that you knew exactly what you were signing away and what rights you were signing away. The interesting thing is that if you take your kids to the trampoline park and you sign a waiver for them, you sign a waiver for you, and y'all are bouncing on a trampoline and the trampoline splits because they haven't been taking care of it, you both get hurt, the waiver may be binding against you, but it's not going to be binding against your child. Your child's claim may still proceed. There's a case that came out, had the name of it written down, and I can't find it. But basically, it says a minor child's rights can't be signed away by a parent in a waiver situation. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit on the law. But the answer to the question, good lawyer answer, maybe. but again, that would be a quick consult with a lawyer. Most lawyers, such as our firm, wouldn't charge for a consultation on this to review the waiver, look at it, make sure that it is what rights were waived and whether it was specifically to that type of injury. I've actually have done some waivers for some of my friends that own businesses, which so I do it as a favor. I don't charge them, but I've seen a lot of waivers over the years, so I kind of know which ones are strong and tight, and which ones are a little loose. So I'll tell them, they always try to bring the downloaded ones from the internet, and I'm like, nah, we need to tighten that up a little.
Yes, yes.
But, anyways, so we're coming into a conclusion of another great show, Marion. Thank you so much
Absolutely.
For helping. Appreciate it. And as we get towards our wrap down section, you want to remind people how they can submit questions to us. Maybe they'll have a question on our show next week.
Absolutely. There are three ways to submit your legal questions and get a response in 24 hours. There's lawchat247.com to be answered and responded in 24 hours. Lawchat247 Facebook page through the Messenger app. Or send an email directly to Mark at mark@brwlawyers.com.
And very good. As we get hear our wrap-up music coming, we know we have about 30, 40 seconds. I want to kind of conclude. We started off the show talking about the Guide for Auto Insurance Claims. And kind of conclude the show just reminding people that this is a 16-page booklet that covers every aspect of your auto insurance claim, property damage, personal injuries, to giving a recorded statement, to hiring a lawyer. It's all available free. You can go to our website, brwlawyers.com, and just answer a quick question about your email, and you'll be directed to an automatic download. Or you can call us at 433-7766.
Sponsored by Butler, Richardson, Wolf, Injury Lawyers, proudly serving the citizens of the Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida Gulf Coast since 1987. Learn more at brwlawyers.com. If you need a response to a legal question, go to lawchat247.com. That's lawchat247.com and submit your question. And be sure to join us next Tuesday evening at 7 for another edition of Law Chat 24/7, when we will continue to review and discuss legal issues that impact you and our community.